That was striker Sue Rago of Geneva on the Bell Atlantic picket line. You're tuned to WEOS Geneva or WXXE Fenner, Syracuse.
You're listening to Unwelcome Guests. I'm Chris Sturr. As most listeners probably know, tens of thousands of people took to the streets 2 weeks ago in Philadelphia during the Republican National Convention in a set of demonstrations known as R2K. Similar D2K demonstrations are planned for the Democratic National Convention. The activism surrounding the two major parties' national conventions are a continuation of the movement against corporate globalization that has so far featured demonstrations at the meetings of the World Trade Organization in Seattle last December and demonstrations at the meetings of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund in Washington, D.C. in April. Regular listeners of Unwelcome Guests also know that hundreds of protesters were arrested and jailed by the Philadelphia police. As recently as last Tuesday, 431 protesters were still in jail, one whole week after their arrest. The following is a statement issued by 24 male prisoners who were arrested during the demonstrations. Sunday, August 6th at 1:58 p.m. Message from prisoners at CFCF. By prisoners at CFCF forwarded by R2K Legal. We are 24 male prisoners currently held at Kern-Fromhold Correctional Facility for our participation or attempted participation in the August 1st nonviolent direct actions against the Republican Convention in Philadelphia. The carefully choreographed conventions of both major parties have nothing to do with democracy. They are corporate-sponsored pageants designed to legitimize a system of corporate class rule that crushes the human spirit and that is destroying the planet. The criminal justice system of cops, courts, and prisons that targets poor and working-class people in general and people of color in particular is a cornerstone of a system that serves the rich and maintains their rule. Our actions in the streets of Philadelphia were intended to shine a light on the incarceration of 2 million people in the U.S., on the systematic use of police brutality to terrorize whole communities, on the racism and cruelty of the death penalty, on the many political prisoners, including Mumia Abu-Jamal, who are caged for their commitment to social justice. Our actions were aimed at disrupting the Republican convention to the best of our ability. While we're sorry any inconvenience we may have caused the people of Philadelphia, we are proud of what we did to expose this rotten system. From the moment of our arrest, we have experienced and witnessed the workings of a system designed to dehumanize people. Many of us were brutalized in the course of arrests. Some of us were beaten or pepper-sprayed after we were handcuffed. In jail, as many as 9 people were packed into cells designed for 2 people. People with dietary restrictions went without food for up to 48 hours. In some cases, our hands and feet were cuffed together, and some of us had our cuffs so tight that we lost feelings in our hands or bled as a result. We were denied the opportunity to meet with our lawyers prior to arraignment and were arraigned in a courtroom closed to the general public with the exception of select members of the capitalist media. We were arraigned with a court-appointed public defender serving as counsel, despite our explicitly and repeatedly stated desire to be represented by our own counsel, who were denied access to the proceedings. We were charged with a variety of misdemeanors, in a few cases, with felonies. Our individual bails have been set at between $10,000 and $1 million. Many, if not all, of the charges against us are either greatly exaggerated or completely falsified. At Curran-Fromhold Correctional Facility, County Jail, we have been placed in a special pod where we have little contact with other prisoners. While we regard our conditions here as dehumanizing, we recognize that we are receiving special treatment, such as extra food. So far, we have not been beaten or physically hurt by personnel here. Throughout this process, we have sought to resist and stand in solidarity with each other to the best of our abilities. Almost all of us have refused to give our names. Many of us have had to be physically dragged through the various stages of this process. We have kept our spirits high through singing and chanting and pounding on our cell walls. We developed systems for communicating with each other and for reaching decisions by consensus. Many of us ripped the bracelets intended to identify us off our wrists. We resisted fingerprinting and attempts to photograph us. Some of us have refused food. In jail, we stripped naked to make our processing more difficult. In the course of all this, we have discovered strengths we never knew we had and have built a wall of solidarity based on profound love and respect for each other. We have drawn particular strength from the proud defiance of the sisters whose loud voices we have heard and whose acts of resistance we have occasionally been able to witness. While our access to information is restricted, we are aware of the efforts of those on the outside to assist us. We love you all. We are in here for you and know that you are out there for us. We believe that our experiences so far strongly vindicate us in our decision to take powerful action to expose the brutality and injustice of the so-called criminal justice system. As we go through this process, we are learning personally of the mistreatment people experience every day in this country. As a group of mainly white and mainly middle-class men, we know full well that the treatment routinely received by poor people, people of color, and other marginalized people is much worse than what we have received. While we have had little contact with other prisoners, that contact has been overwhelmingly positive. They know why we are here, and they let us know in many ways that they support our actions and respect our commitment and solidarity. In turn, we are learning from them about the workings of the prison and their own traditions of resistance. They have our respect, admiration, and solidarity. So far, the efforts of some personnel to cultivate distrust and antagonism between us and the other prisoners have failed. We are political prisoners. We are being held on outrageous charges, in many cases with no foundation whatsoever in our actual actions. Our bail figures are far out of proportion, even for the crimes we are falsely accused of. We are here because of our political commitment and because we dared to defy the corporate powers that be as they were attempting to give a veneer of popular support to the rule of the few. We call on those who support us to continue to put pressure on the Philadelphia authorities to win our quick release. We urge you all to continue to organize protests on our behalf and to write and call the mayor's office, the prosecutors, and the prison authorities to demand, 1. Our immediate and unconditional release on our own recognizance, 2. That all charges be dropped, and 3. That prisoners with dietary restrictions, vegans and vegetarians, be provided with adequate food that they can eat. Call these officials and let them know that you support our demands. District Attorney Lynn Abraham, area code 215-686-8701. Mayor John Street, area code 215-686-2181. City Solicitor Ken Trujillo, 215-683-5003. 30 of us have gone on hunger strike to win these demands. We want everyone to know that we are in good spirits and remain strong in our solidarity. We come from a variety of backgrounds and perspectives, but we are united in our commitment to genuine democracy and an end to corporate rule in general and to the criminal injustice system in particular. Free Mumia Abu-Jamal and all political prisoners. Stop police terror. Tear down the prison industrial complex. End the death penalty. Write to us. Signed, John Doe, J.D., Professor, John Doe, O.D.B., John Doe, Wolfman, John Doe, 6010, Dinger, John Doe, That's Not Good for Business, John Doe, Slick, John Doe, 6013, John Doe, Mac, John Doe, Mango, John Doe, B.A., John Doe, Sparky, John Doe, Flea, John Doe, Hank H. Parts, John Doe, Wisp, John Doe, Tennessee, Jimnikoff, John Doe, Buckshot, John Doe, God, John Doe, Switchblade, John Doe, Ms. Pac-Man, John Doe, Zeke, J.D. Lovebug, J.D. Cowbone. That was a statement issued by prisoners being held for their participation in the recent demonstrations in Philadelphia on the occasion of the Republican Party's National Convention. Similar demonstrations will be happening alongside the Democratic National Convention in Los Angeles, and we can expect that more people will be arrested for their vocal opposition to the two major parties' support of corporations at the expense of the vast majority of people in the U.S. and throughout the world. Among the protesters jailed in Philadelphia were two activists from the Ithaca Coalition for Global Justice. The coalition has sponsored teach-ins and discussions about globalization and corporate capitalism and sent delegations of activists to the demonstrations in Washington and Philadelphia. This past Tuesday, there was a rally at the Ithaca Commons sponsored by the coalition in support of the two Ithacans and the hundreds of other activists jailed in Philadelphia for their participation in the demonstrations. The lunch hour rally attracted a small number of activists who carried signs, handed out flyers to passers-by, and let people know about the jailed activists in Philadelphia. I spoke with several people participating in the rally, beginning with a young couple who had not been to the demonstrations in Philadelphia, but who had been jailed as a result of their participation in the demonstration against the IMF and the World Bank in Washington last April. I spoke with them about the conditions the jailed activists in Philadelphia might expect and about the rationale behind the practice of jail solidarity.
Yeah, we were jailed in D.C. for, you know, crossing a police barricade, very straightforward, with a large group of people. And we were first taken to a downtown jail and then to a Marshall jail. And the situation there was, you know, pretty bad. I wasn't brutalized, but I know people who were hurt. I know transgender people who were specifically attacked for that, because when they start sending you off, the males and the females, there were a lot of bad situations. And I know a lot of queer people were specifically targeted by the marshals. And, you know, we were yelled at. It was very unpleasant. We were denied phone calls and food and health care. Some, you know, people were, their inhalers were taken away and didn't get them back. So that kind of stuff to me is just standard right now for these things. But there's a big difference, because I'm very scared about what's happening right now in this country with, you know, protesters. There's definitely potential for a great new movement going on right now, but also there's potential for major backlash in the country. And, you know, people are talking about a black scare, like about the anarchists reminiscent of the Red Scare, because there's a lot of media right now talking about the scary anarchists and, you know, they're out of control. And if you see someone, you know, with crazy hair and wearing all black, you better watch out. And it definitely has potential to turn into something really bad, and it already appears to be. The difference between D.C. and Philadelphia is enormous, and I thought that the situation in D.C. was dangerous enough as it was. The people in Philadelphia have already been held for over a week, and, you know, their bails, as you probably know, are set. You know, people, two members of my affinity group have bails set at $20,000 and $30,000, and these are people who were, you know, with all of their hearts and souls trying to protest injustice in this country, which is, of course, in theory, allowed. And now they're in jail. And they're rotting there. And, you know, I heard they're hunger striking. That's the latest thing I heard. So jail solidarity is a really powerful part to me of the movement right now, because it allows us to make a plan to protest and, in the case of arrest, to stick together so that nobody disappears into the jail system, which can happen in these big cities, you know. And another important thing about jail solidarity is it means that, you know, people of color and minors and anybody who might be specially targeted and might be more likely to have their charges higher, might be more likely to rot in jail with nobody noticing. If you have affinity group structure and you have jail solidarity where none of you are going to give your names, none of you are going to leave, none of you are going to take the easy way out if offered it, unless everyone can. And that's very powerful.
Part of jail solidarity is that you don't give your name and you don't and you don't allow yourself to be processed normally the way they want you to be,
right,
in the jail. But how would you respond to people who say, well, these people could get out if they would just cooperate instead of continuing with the solidarity?
Well, it's true. Yes, some of them could get out. But the point is, we're not about to... We want to clog up the system. If we plan to get arrested, then, you know, we want to... When we were in D.C., we wanted to clog up the D.C. jail system until they were forced to let us go, because we weren't doing anything wrong. We don't deserve to be in jail, you know. But we're willing to take that until everyone's assured no charges or a traffic violation or something minimal. The main idea is, you know, of course, some people probably could get out easily, but we're not willing to, you know, compromise. We want everyone to have equal situation.
Right, and it sounds like from what you were saying that some people might not be able to get out as easily.
That's
and might be...
definitely the case. And furthermore, it's solidarity among everyone who was arrested at the protest, including people who were charged with more serious crimes, because we don't know the circumstances around those crimes, and just because someone's charged with assault doesn't mean they did something wrong. Charges are being randomly applied and misapplied and trumped up in Philadelphia right now. You know, cops are beating people, and when people try to stop it, they're being charged with assaulting a police officer. And people need to think about these circumstances and not just react to the extremity and the scariness of hearing, assault, assault, people are assaulting cops. You know, think about the circumstances surrounding that.
Okay, now I'm speaking with Laura, who is a student in Ithaca, and she is here participating in the protest on the Ithaca Commons, protest of, well, maybe you can explain what it's a protest about.
I'm primarily here and to show my solidarity for the two Ithacans, as well as the 400 or so other individuals who are stuck in the Philadelphia jail system as a result of their nonviolent actions, primarily the last week in Philadelphia. And I think that that's kind of an umbrella cause for the reason they were there. There's a lot of other intertwined issues, but primarily I'm here today to get literature out to people to let them know what's going on currently. So
were you in Philly?
Yeah, I was in Philly for 3 days last weekend before the direct action happened, so mostly the permitted rallies and then the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, which was unpermitted on Monday.
What was the atmosphere like?
I thought it was great. I thought that our presence was very strong, and I thought that people were really willing to listen to what we had to say, primarily because it was before the convention started, so there wasn't a whole lot of hustle bustle going on otherwise. But I think that even the police were cooperative with our efforts, and they didn't really get in our way as far as demonstrating and getting our message out. But as the week got on and the Republicans came to town, you know, different images kind of came through newspapers, and the attention shifted to the Republicans from, you know, peaceful protesters to kind of the vandals and stuff like that.
I was in D.C. for the protests, and I saw a lot. I mean, I'm wondering if you have any anecdotes to tell about interactions between the protesters and the police or anything like that.
Yeah, I guess nothing too personally, because up to this point I was in D.C. also, and that was my first kind of encounter with mass groups of people kind of going against, you know, former, you know, dominating system. But so I've kind of shied away from the direct action and putting myself right on the, you know, on the line, because I haven't made that decision yet. But I don't know, especially seeing the picture of the two Ithaca people, really just, it brings it home when you see someone that you just spent time with a few days ago and you know that their efforts are good.
What picture are you talking about?
There's a picture that someone found on the internet from Reuters, and it's two Ithaca community members, and they went down a week early to make puppets, and the puppets we used, they created, and we used in the marches and stuff like that, and they decided to stay on and participate in direct action. And there's a photo of one of them getting yanked by the neck and just, like, screaming, and the other one's looking on, and it's horrible. And
wow. So when was the seizure of the puppets?
There was, even before, probably a week before people started going down to build them, there was kind of a puppet theater, and there was also a Ministry of Propaganda, which they kind of raided. And so a lot of people claim that that was so much of our message and the creativity, and they took that away from us. So they took away a part of our voice that we didn't even have a chance to, you know, give. But
okay, well, thanks a lot.
There was a 7-mile march from the center of Philly to where the Republican convention was being held. What was interesting about that, though, was that along the way we got to talk to a whole bunch of people who were standing by the side of the street who normally wouldn't have been able to see this sort of thing and wouldn't have been able to, I guess, feel like something could be done about the issues that the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, who were organizing the march, were protesting about. And one of the best bits was when we were walking past a healthcare center, and on one side of the street there was a public funded healthcare center. On the other side of the street was a private one, and the private one was all sort of glass windows and smoked glass and all this sort of thing, and people sort of staring out of it looking rather nervous. And on the other side of the street, sort of out in the sun on the concrete, were a whole bunch of, I guess, public employees who were very excited and very sort of I guess proud wouldn't be too bad a word for it, to see the Kensington Welfare Rights Union out on the street campaigning essentially for their salaries, but also for the funding of public health in the US. And they were brilliant. You know, they gave us water. It was an exceptionally hot day. Mm-hmm. They gave us water. They were sort of full of encouragement. They chatted us for ages, and it was just, I don't know. I think that's possibly the best thing about direct action, is not that it gums up street corners and pisses people off in traffic jams, but that it shows, at least to the people who are around the site of struggle, that things could be different and things could be better, and think, and they're not alone in being pissed off, and they're right to, you know, it legitimates this sort of feeling of being angry with the system,
right.
And gives people an opportunity to sort of think about how things might be different.
Right. So that was on the weekend before Saturday or Sunday.
That was on Monday.
Oh, Monday. Oh, okay. Yeah. Did you stay through to Tuesday?
Unfortunately, I had to be back here, so I wasn't able to attend the unpermitted stuff.
So sort of the same kind of structure as they had in D.C. with a permitted rally and then an unpermitted.
Well, actually, I mean, the thing on Monday was unpermitted too, and that was interesting as well. They had the Kensington Welfare Rights Union put a bunch of disabled people and older people, older citizens and children at the front of the rally, and you know, I mean, in a sense, it was shameless because the police aren't going to arrest those people for walking in the street. And you know, the 10,000-15,000 of us walked behind them, but that, I mean, again, that shows that despite the sometimes very credible threats that the police were mounting against the rally, we were able to go ahead, and we were able to, you know, sort of be strategic and have our own, you know, and have our way despite the protests of the state.
Suppose a listener thought that that, you know, if it's an unpermitted rally, then people can expect to get arrested, and that we shouldn't feel sorry for people who are in jail because they were marching in an unpermitted rally. Or how would you respond to that?
Well, I think the issue is, how can a democracy? How is it that you can express what you want to express in a democracy? In the U.S., it's very hard to express what you want to express if what you want to say isn't sanctioned by either of the two major political parties. And they seem that there are very, very few opportunities for legitimate democratic expression. And what's interesting about the fact that we couldn't get a permit for this rally is that they foreclosed an opportunity for, you know, people democratically to express what they wanted to say. So to the listener who says, you know, who says, well, they deserve what they got, I say, well, actually, no. Here are people who are just being democratic, but they're being democratic in ways that the state doesn't allow. They're being democratic in a way that those in power find uncomfortable. And yet this is exactly what democracy is about. It's about making things uncomfortable for people in power. That's the point of a democracy, so that the people can rule and the people in power can, you know, have to remain subservient to the majority. So we didn't, you know, we didn't deserve this at all. But I mean, this is democracy at work.
Okay. So were you in in Philly?
I didn't go to Philly, but I've been reading about it and hearing how little of the information gets into the mainstream media, and the mainstream media are saying what a wonderful job of restraint the Philly police are doing. And then you hear that they're hitting the prisoners, handcuffed prisoners, with pepper spray. How do you wipe your eyes that way?
Right.
And even the people who've given reports of what's going on in prison say that we get very little information. I think the most telling information is that they tell the prisoners that no lawyers are out there who want to represent them, and they tell the lawyers no prisoners are asking for lawyers. Mm-hmm. It's really sad.
So what's your main source of information about the activism in Philly?
Main source? Well, probably the email.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it, I try to listen to Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Too. But when it went to 2 hours a day, how much time do I have to listen to Amy Goodman?
Yeah.
I hope she's getting good coverage. Free Speech Radio, of course, is the people who have boycotted Pacifica because of their strong arm tactics, and they're really getting quite a little network going themselves.
Okay, well, you were down in Philly. And maybe you can tell us about some of your experiences.
Well, yeah, I went down to Philly. One of my particular interests is I work with Catholic Charities in a welfare-to-work program. I was particularly interested in the Kensington Welfare Rights Union in Philadelphia. It's probably one of the nation's premier welfare rights groups. And they were one of the big organizers down in Philly, and they had a big march on Monday, probably attended by 15,000 to 20,000 people. So, for example, they said it was an unpermitted march, and the police said as soon as you step off the curb at City Hall, the plan was to go all the way from City Hall to the Convention Center, which was 7 miles away. As soon as you step off the curb, you're all going to be arrested. And it was funny because there were 20 people in wheelchairs that led the march off with 50 senior citizens, and the police just let it happen. Mm-hmm. You know. But that it turned out that was a good portion of us came back Monday night, including myself. Tuesday, a number of people stayed down. Some younger people stayed down and partook in some direct action directed at the criminal justice system, the war on drugs, the disproportion people of color and poor put in prisons in the first place, the fact that the prisons have increased in population incredibly in the last 20 years, the prison industrial complex. So they were doing direct action in order to bring that to a stop, bring some attention to that. Our concern here today, why we're here today, is to bring attention to the fact that 1 week later, there's 300 people still in jail. Two people from Ithaca are still in jail as well. And it's just incredible that they're doing this kind of solidarity, and we're on the outside here trying to bring light to the issues that they went down for and the fact that they're still being unjustly imprisoned right now.
Could you talk a little bit about jail solidarity and what that's all about and some of the ideas that go behind that?
Well, my understanding of it is that the authorities, all the way from the local police in Philly, it could be Los Angeles coming up in a couple weeks with the Democratic Convention, are kind of working in tandem with state and national police law enforcement, like the FBI, and they're really focusing on really targeting leaders, so-called leaders of the movement. For example, there are two people in Philadelphia who have been given $1 million bails, which these are people doing civil disobedience, nothing else here, folks. The idea of doing jail solidarity is you can't target just one person like that. You know, we're all in this together. If you're going to target one person, you're targeting all of us. So that's why there's still 300 people in jail, because they're taking that strong stand. So we're saying these people are doing, just like Martin Luther King or Mahatma Gandhi did acts of civil disobedience, you know, that's a great statement to create change, and people really stand up and take notice.
What would you say to people who say that that, you know, people who are participating in an unpermitted rally that wasn't authorized can't complain if they get arrested?
Well, I would say, the First Amendment says that we have the right to assemble. Nonetheless, there is, you step over the line when your assembling is obstructing other people. The people who did get arrested in Philadelphia, including the people from Ithaca, were actually sitting down and blocking traffic. So you could say that that's, I mean, I think they, I'm fairly sure that they knew they were going to be arrested, and I've been arrested myself for civil disobedience. My complaint isn't that people they know what they're getting into, but I don't think they knew that they were getting into this long of a jail situation and unreasonable bails. And there's rumors, reports, some of them seem pretty credible, of some police brutality going on.
Why do you think the police response was so harsh? I mean, why, for example, what could possibly justify, or if not justify, explain, you know, $1 million bail for some of the activists?
Well, before I answer that question, I just want to make sure that you know that 73 people were arrested Tuesday at the puppet making place in Philadelphia, and all the puppets were destroyed. Now, why would that be? Why would they need to destroy puppets? And I would say is because what the puppets were expressing a very strong message against what the reason why we go down there is we're protesting corporate control of just about every aspect of our lives, and those puppets were dramatic expressions of that. Why would they need to destroy the puppets?
Well, for listeners who haven't been to any of these protests, maybe you could explain what the puppets are. I mean, they're not sort of small. I mean, explain what the puppets look like and what role they play in the demonstrations.
Well, some they vary in size. So I believe that the Ithaca puppet basically was kind of just maybe 15 feet tall. It was a picture of a large skyscraper building that was, and on its left arm was the Democratic Party, on its right arm was the Republican Party, not to be confused with left or right necessarily, but, and that the corporation is feeding equal amounts of money into both the Democratic and the Republican Party. It's a very visual display of that. So that's one small example. I didn't actually get to see many of the puppets. I didn't get to see the puppets. And that's one of my complaints, is that, you know, it's like people are saying that, well, this movement doesn't have a message. Well, they're hell-bent on squashing our message. This movement, this anti-globalization movement, this anti-capitalist movement, is becoming very effective, is becoming very sophisticated, and I think that their response, they realize that they want to stop this. I mean, you know, who are the police paid by? Who are the police protecting? They're not protecting poor people. They're protecting the rich and corporations, by and large. So it's, you know, the rich and corporations are coming under attack by this movement. So they've got to squash that movement and let them know that they're serious. You know, and also the Democratic Convention is coming up just, you know, very shortly from now. They don't want those people going to L.A.
Right, right. So are there people from the Ithaca Coalition for Global Justice who are planning to go to L.A.?
Yeah, there are three people right now, to my knowledge.
You can talk about a little bit about why targeting both the Republicans and the Democrats.
Well, basically, it's interesting. I was born and raised in Indiana and in a liberal Democrat family. And I just got thoroughly disgusted with the Democrats. I actually ran as a third party, as a Green, for city council in South Bend, Indiana. And I've just gotten so thoroughly disgusted with the Democrats. I don't expect anything of the Republicans, but the Democrats just seem to have basically fallen down this cliff closer and closer to the Republicans. And you know, there may be minor differences, you know, like maybe the Democrats are pro-choice and the Republicans aren't. But there's not, in terms of the large economic issues globally and nationally and locally, I don't see much of a difference between them.
We've been listening to the voices of Ithaca area activists who participated in a rally last Tuesday at the Ithaca Commons, held on behalf of two Ithacans who were being held in jail in Philadelphia for their participation in the demonstrations against corporate capitalism, structural racism, and the pretense of democracy on the occasion of the Republican National Convention. If you are concerned about the way protesters have been treated at the hands of the city of Philadelphia and its police department and jail system, you may want to call the public officials mentioned in the prisoner's statement I read earlier. Those names and phone numbers were as follows. District Attorney Lynn Abraham, 215-686-8701. Mayor John Street, 215-686-2181. City Solicitor Ken Trujillo, that's Trujillo, 215-683-5003. You may also want to send Mayor John Street a fax. His fax number is 215-686-2180. For more information about the demonstrations in Philadelphia, visit the website of the Philadelphia Independent Media Center, www.phillyimc.org, or the main website for the Independent Media Center movement, www.indymedia.org. Both websites include a wealth of information about the protests, including photographs, video clips, radio broadcasts, and articles and commentaries submitted by independent journalists covering the events. For information about the demonstrations to be held at the upcoming Democratic National Convention, visit the website set up by protest organizers, www.d2kla.org.
As the Democratic National Convention approaches in Los Angeles, police there have begun a campaign of harassment against activists' homes and meeting places, tactics which were employed in Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia. The Southern California chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union announced its intention to file for an injunction restraining the LAPD from this behavior. This will be the second court action filed on behalf of activists planning to protest the Democratic Convention. The Philadelphia chapter of the ACLU is a different story entirely. Its legal director, Stephen Presser, has drawn nationwide condemnation for statements reported in the press regarding the actions of the Philadelphia police. Here are some of the statements attributed to Presser. From the August 4th edition of the Philadelphia Inquirer, quote, Stephen Presser said the police department acted within the law if it targeted leaders planning an unpermitted and hence illegal demonstration. It's probably smart tactics, Presser said, referring to the selective arrests, and it probably succeeded if you look at the speed at which the city returned to normalcy. I don't see that there's a constitutional question here. It just makes good sense on the part of the department, close quote. On Channel 29 Fox News, Presser stated that the overall conduct of the Philly cops had been, quote, spectacular. We'd like to dedicate the following song to Mr. Presser.
As though I lost a father of mine, but thou connects and I see.
was Jello Biafra and Mojo Nixon performing a remake of the Phil Oakes song, Love Me, I'm a Liberal. Jello Biafra was in Philadelphia for the protests. He dropped in to chat with the folks at the Independent Media Center internet radio station, WR2K.
We're here with Jello Biafra. Jello, would you like to give us any of your input on what you see going on in Philadelphia?
Yeah, it's interesting they would have it here because this is one of the most third worldified, dramatically unequal cities I know of in the United States. I mean, the nasty parts are really nasty, and the police are really out of control. I mean, especially if you happen to live in the move house a few years ago, or be the guy they caught beating on camera and are now frantically defending themselves.
Did you go to Seattle or Washington, D.C.?
To Seattle, yes. Was not able to go to Washington, D.C.
And what was your take on the whole scene?
I'm really glad I went. I mean, it's always nicer to be a small little part of history than to watch it on TV, isn't it?
Yes.
And I think what blew me away the most was not just the sheer numbers of people that came out to protest an organization hardly anyone had heard of 3 weeks earlier. I mean, when high finance becomes a street issue, you know something is getting through, and it's getting through outside of the corporate mass media, because they ain't the ones who are going to talk about that. And what really blew me away, I do have memories of the resistance against the Vietnam War and the civil rights and ecology movements of the 60s. I was a kid then and lived in a volatile college town where a lot of interesting things went down. And this time, what was different, I think, was it was people who would be derided by some as tree huggers, freaks, whatever, marching side by side people they might normally be deriding as rednecks or hard hats. The unions were not on the same side of the fence in the anti-war protests, and this is a very, very big breakthrough when labor and the activist fringe are talking to each other, getting along, seeing that there's going to be some of the same goals, such as Earth First in Northern California, and the striking, striking workers against Kaiser Aluminum in Spokane are working together because they know that they have the common great Satan, Charles Hurwitz and Maxam Corporation, who owns both Kaiser and Pacific Lumber. So it's people working together who normally don't, something people like Michael Moore and Ralph Nader have been begging us to do for years. Moore's solution was rather extreme. You know, all the radicals should get off their high horse and go line dancing. Now, I haven't quite gone that far, but I see a meeting of the minds, and I see it's very important that everybody out there become a part of this, too, because this isn't just about waiting for us to create the media and reports for you, or to be lied to night after night by CNN, Peter Jennings, and Mickey Mouse. It's don't hate the media, become the media. And becoming the media not only means these kind of radio broadcasts and underground zines and communication on the web, it means doing what people like Moore and Nader are saying and going one-on-one to people you know in your family, at work, at school. If they're mad at the same things you are, the wedge issue being why can't I put food on the table, but they're falling for Rush Limbaugh or George Bush or Pat Buchanan or Dr. Laura or whatever, you don't just turn your back on them and say you're stupid, you're a redneck, whatever. You reason with them and point out the real reasons why people aren't able to put food on the table and the benefits of both direct action with even the Teamsters getting involved and the electoral arm, which in this case I think is probably the Green Party, the Nader campaign at the national level and then thinking globally and acting locally, many others running as green or of similar minds at the local level, and that's the reason to pay attention and vote, is the more people show up locally, the more you can actually make a difference on the local issues and not get horrible ballot initiatives passed and get the good ones passed instead.
Jello, I'll let you take a breather there and ask you a question about how you're able to keep going when so many people are looking at the democracy around us and kind of view it just as a great big swamp, as one big stagnation.
I think if I didn't have such a sick sense of humor, I would have killed myself a long time ago. I also, in my case, I think I've been very fortunate to have an outlet where I can actually make a living off my big mouth and use that big mouth as part of becoming the media. Like any artist should use their art to educate and provide a form of, shall we say, infotainment at a time when the corporate media isn't doing its job anymore as journalists. And so as long as people continue to act so stupid, I'm never going to run out of ideas. So what kind of keeps me going is, I guess when people bring me in for my spoken word shows especially, I don't wind up surrounded by the apathetic youth or the frat boys or whatever. I wound up surrounded by the cool people and stuff and get some new brain food from them often as not. Even if it's somebody I don't necessarily agree with, like the guy who brought me into one of the Idaho schools in Pocatello, and he saw his future in nuclear engineering. I was asking him, why? And got a lesson in how that particular mind works. But anyway, it's just a matter, and now it's not just a handful of people who see what's going on and, to quote the movie They Live, have put the glasses on and watched the mask come off. This hasn't happened since the Vietnam War, and the galvanizing issue bringing so many people out into the streets and hopefully into the voting booth this fall to derail the Democratic Party and put it out of its misery, this time the galvanizing issue is corporate rule, corporate feudalism. We don't even have capitalism anymore. We have feudalism now, and people have had it, and they figure rather than give up, they don't have any more choice anymore. I mean, if you're going to get stuck with nothing but a horrible job in an electronic plantation 70 hours a week with a laptop following you home, why not fight back?
We were talking earlier about where our resources come from, and I know you were talking about, you know, going out and engaging our mothers, our brothers, and our coworkers, and I want to know where you get your information. You had talked about just, you know, meeting people and finding...
Again, I get it all over the map. I'm computer illiterate, so I don't get it off the net at all. But, of course, plenty of people download things and mail them to me, more than I can possibly keep up with. Plus, I read some publications I think are pretty important to keep up with. Buried Information, The Nation, The Progressive, sometimes Mother Jones or Multinational Monitor. And Z is good. And, I'm spacing on the others right now. Just I hardly ever read books, believe it or not, but I read a lot of periodicals. And I get a lot of letters from weird people in the mail, sometimes relaying life experiences that they have no idea how interesting they are to me.
That sounds so scary.
Especially what a lot of kids do to hide my albums from their parents, the creative lengths they go to plot against their own family who doesn't like what they're listening to. And, I'll bet you didn't hide it behind the makeup mirror, though. That's a common one, actually. And just different things that's happened when people's parents have locked them up in private institutions because they don't like the music they're listening to or think they're on drugs or whatever. Just and because all this stuff comes to me, I realized early on when I started doing spoken word shows, people are most interested in my weird-ass sense of humor and in the buried information about things they didn't know about, such as plutonium going up on space shuttles, and if they blow up, we all die, etc. So I started taking that role more seriously as filling in the blanks of information. But as I began doing this, our mass media was bought out by multinationals where General Electric owns NBC, and therefore the world's largest arms and nuclear power manufacturer has editorial control over NBC News. You know, I mean, you have to be media literate, too, to realize who owns what, when they're lying. That's a great way to get through to somebody else about, you know, foster cynicism in other people who actually believe what they see on CNN. Start with the commercials, then point out just how things are slanted, and sure enough, sooner or later, you're going to find somebody who's going to lie, such as the current issue of Time Magazine is just riddled with it. You know, just, the cover is a big, pull at the heartstrings defense of genetically engineered food, saying millions of children will starve unless we have Frankenfood now. Another sidebar about the Republican convention has a line in it, Mumia Abu-Jamal should be executed now. That's not unbiased journalism. And it's just all over this particular issue at Time Magazine. It's worse than most of them.
You know, whenever the Free Mumia March happened yesterday, there was a gathering in Logan Square, about 100 Free Mumia people showed up to take to the streets, and there was already a contingent of pro-lifers there. And I thought it would be interesting if we could get the pro-lifers to march with the Free Mumia people.
They won't, though. I just interviewed one of those at the Political Fest tourist exhibit that's part of the convention, and this guy was just an absolute fundamentalist robot, and he went on and on on giving me graphic descriptions of how they pull fetuses apart during abortions and everything. So I said, well, so I assume you must be against the death penalty. Oh, no, 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 not at all. Well, why not? I mean, does this mean that you want to save the life of the unborn but kill them when they're born? And he said, well, basically, yes, it's biblically ordained. We got this guy on camera, too. I mean, instead of covering the protests, I think I'm going to wind up specimen hunting. I've already interviewed Nina Hartley nude about freedom of speech and sex with Republicans and stuff. And
how'd that one go?
It was hilarious, although she didn't want to speak for any of her fellow workers or name any names or anything. So then another woman who was ahead of me in line to be the fake newscaster on the convention floor at the Political Fest 2000 exhibit, where anybody can stand up and pretend to be a news commentator. And this woman was doing all kinds of lewd gestures, and I thought she was pretty funny, so I asked her a little bit about her background. It turned out she was a professional dancer and an escort person. And in her opinion, Republicans actually really did like to get it on once they were alone in all kinds of exotic ways. And she didn't really want to divulge that, except that she said the weirdest one she ever had was getting it on with a pilot in the cockpit of an airliner at 20,000 feet and getting paid for it.
Thanks.
Top that, volunteer indie media grunts.
Maybe we should be following you around.
So, what do you think of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union?
I don't know that much about them yet. I've read a little bit about them over the years, and I think it's a high time that poor people who are either bashed or ignored in the mass media get in everybody's face and show people just what they're really going through. I'm hoping to interview some people in Kensington for Free Speech TV and the Camcorder Truth Jihad about what it's like to get cut off of welfare under the Clinton-Gingrich welfare reform rules. And I think in the long run, what I'd like to see is a million homeless march on Washington, where at least half of the 2 million homeless people nationwide all show up in Washington and come to visit and decide to stay. A similar direct action was done during the early part of the Depression, and it got Herbert Hoover voted out of office. Million homeless march on Washington, an idea whose time has come.
In closing, a few words for the FBI agents, police, and others worrying about the issue of legal versus illegal demonstrations. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness.
If you have an event you'd like us to announce or an issue you'd like us to cover on the program, you can contact us through our website at www.radioforall.org/unwelcome. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Unwelcome Guests is produced by Chris Sturr, Jesse Lind, Lynn Gary, and Sean Ewald. We are solely responsible for its content.
You still catch me napping one day and they'll kill me. Then I'll be gone, but that won't be my end. For my guns and my saddle will always be filled by